Good afternoon and welcome to Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy, a monthly program designed to bring you timely information on energy topics of interest to Cape Cod. I'm your host, Amy Vohl, Marketing and Communications Coordinator at Cape Light Compact, along with John Burns, an Energy Efficiency Program Planner at Cape Light Compact. We're located in the Superior Courthouse in the County Complex in Barnstable. On September 12, 2007, the Cape and Vineyard Electric Cooperative was formed to help member towns on Cape Cod and Martha's Vineyard collectively develop and own renewable energy projects. In fact, the ultimate goal of the co-op, the first of its kind in the country, is to meet the electricity needs from renewable sources that are owned, operated, and funded by the co-op of its member towns and counties. The co-op's renewable energy projects will result in savings on municipal electric bills and begin to stabilize electricity rates for all residents and businesses on Cape Cod and Martha's Vineyard. Does this sound too good to be true? That's the first question I'd like to ask today's guest, who is Maggie Downey, the administrator of the Cape Light Compact and somebody who serves as the representative to the Cape and Vineyard Electric Cooperative. Maggie also holds the post of Assistant County Administrator for Barnstable County. Maggie, we're very happy to have you on the program with us today.
Well, thank you. Good afternoon.
So, again, the first question, is it too good to be true? I mean, why did you found the cooperative?
The cooperative was formed by the Cape Light Compact. This process started almost 3 years before the September 12th, 2007 date that you just announced. And we began researching forming a cooperative because the towns and counties, two counties on the Vineyard and the Cape, ran into a roadblock in the development of renewable energy generation projects. And the roadblock that we ran into is we were unable, our bond council said that you are not authorized to own electric generation unless you are either a municipal light plant or obtain special legislation. And that, obviously, the one is we are not a municipal light plant, and special legislation takes time, many years. It took Falmouth, who opted to go that route, over 3 years to obtain its special legislation for a wind turbine that it recently commissioned. So we went back to Mass General Law, and we started to look at what are our options. And actually, in Mass General Law, in the Restructuring Act, which is what established the Cape Light Compact, there was language that allowed and authorized for the establishment of electric cooperatives. So we commissioned a study, and we began looking at the cooperative, who should be members, what the makeup should be, and we released that study in 2005.
Mm-hmm. And now this cooperative is just a regional organization, correct?
The cooperative, you know, as I said, we conducted a study, mm-hmm. and the results, one of the facts that came out, or conclusions that came out of the study, is that the cooperative, in order to maximize the benefits from renewable energy projects, needs to maintain a tax-exempt status. So because it had to be a tax-exempt entity, the study recommended that the members be tax exempt so that they be public entities, the towns and the counties on the Cape and Vineyard, as opposed to cooperative that you might be more familiar with in the South, where when you move into that area, that be, instead of becoming a investor-owned utility, or you move into a cooperative territory.
Okay.
Who are the current members?
Actually, we have 14 members of the cooperative. We have the three initial members, Barnstable County, the town of Barnstable, the Cape Light Compact, and then I'll just run down the Cape, and I'll start here because Provincetown is a member of the cooperative. Provincetown, Eastham, Orleans, Brewster, Harwich, Dennis, I said Barnstable already, Mashpee, Sandwich, and Bourne.
And how would a town go about becoming a member?
In order to join, for a town to become a member of the cooperative, it requires a town meeting vote or a town council vote. So it would either have to be on a special or a spring town meeting or a special, and all of those towns went through the process, and you would adopt the bylaws that have been drafted and prepared of the cooperative.
Right. Has there been any resistance to joining?
There has been a little bit. All of the 14 towns No, there has been some question over some of the makeup of in our bylaws. They're delegated, the day-to-day functions of the co-op are delegated to the executive committee, because obviously this isn't, you're running a business and you can't get 23 members, getting them together to make decisions consistently is challenging. So the five-member executive committee runs the day-to-day affairs, and those of those seats, there are three permanent seats. One to the town of Barnstable, Barnstable County, and the Cape Light Compact. And there are some towns that are concerned that that cedes too much authority to the larger towns. To date, the good news is, to date, the cooperative has been able to meet and function as directors. So we haven't had to operate as an executive committee. All of our meetings have involved all of the directors, and they're participating in all of the decision-making process. But the larger an organization gets, the more difficult it is to meet quorum requirements. If we become a 23-member, say if it was all the towns on the Cape and Vineyard and the counties, you could be a 23 or a 24-member entity, and it's hard to get a quorum.
So any resistance has been essentially overcome, then?
Or towns have decided that they're not to join, and that's okay.
And is it just towns who can join the cooperative? What are you know, do they have to have special tax-exempt status to join?
Actually, yes, you've hit the right on the nail right on the head, Amy. As I said, one of the main founding principles or recommendations that came out of the report is, in order to make these projects, any generation, renewable generation, economically viable, you need to maintain tax-exempt status. So we had to ask the IRS for a private letter ruling to say...
Can you explain exactly what that is?
A private letter ruling?
Yes.
When you are questioning whether or not you have to pay taxes, mm-hmm. the decision maker is the federal government. It's the IRS, right. The Internal Revenue Service. Mm-hmm. So the members, we needed an answer, but the IRS will not give you the answer on a hypothetical situation. We had to form the cooperative. That was why we had the three initial members. Mm-hmm. We had to conduct a transaction, and then we submitted that for them for consideration. And they issued a private letter ruling to us saying that as long as your cooperative is made up of what they call Section 115, which are public entities, then you are a tax-exempt entity. Your transactions are not subject to taxes. And what that means is, if you were a cooperative made up of both private and nonprofit and businesses, you would have to pay utility taxes on the selling and the transit of your energy from your wind projects or your PV projects. And when you start adding the taxes, because the margins on these projects, I mean, we're talking very small scale. We're not talking, 400 wind turbines. When you start adding taxes onto the transactions, the economics of them are cost prohibitive.
So, in other words, whatever kind of generation you would produce, number one, you would have to tax your citizens if you were doing this. Say you were reaching out to private citizens. They can't become members, but yet how do they benefit? Because it seems like, obviously, the towns are going to get a huge benefit from getting their municipal load basically, hopefully, paid for, or at least most of it paid for by the renewable energy generated for this, but how does that help regular person?
There are two ways that consumers, residential and small businesses benefit mm-hmm. from the cooperative. And you touched on the first. The goal of the cooperative, and the goals have changed because mm-hmm. as we've been pursuing this, new rules and regulations have been written. The Green Communities Act was signed into law in January of 2008, and that introduced the concept of net metering, virtual net metering, which was not on the horizon when this started. And I can come back to explaining what that is.
Yeah, I'd like you to do that.
The benefits to consumers come twofold. First, all of, as a policy, 10% of the output from the cooperative's projects are sold to the Cape Light Compact and folded into the Cape Light Compact's general power supply program. So we can pass those stable prices and blend it into the larger power supply program. And in the early years, because our projects will be small, we're talking about the upteenth decimal point. You have mm-hmm. to be very candid. It's not, you're not going to see, and these projects don't save cents. You're talking mills, less than a cent in savings. So that will start to introduce and bring benefits to consumers who are participating in the Cape Light Compact's power supply program. And then the second is the wind turbines that we're pursuing, and there are two projects specifically that we're working on right now, one in Harwich, one in Brewster, will bring savings to the members through a power purchase agreement, and those savings will then be passed on and folded into municipal budgets, and we'll be able to have the towns offset rising or meet rising costs without having necessarily to go back to the taxpayers. What each town decides to do with its savings is a decision that the selectmen or the town councilors will have to make. So those are the two ways. You'll see a direct savings in your town's electric bill, and then those savings will be able to be passed through and have benefits throughout your municipal budget. And then the benefits will also be folded into the Cape Light Compacts Power Supply Program for those customers participating on the Compacts project.
What are the statuses of the current projects, and when may they start to generate?
The Brewster and the Harwich projects, we just received our award of Clean Renewable Energy Bonds, better known as CREBS. So we received authorization from the federal government for $20 million in CREBS. Again, clean renewable energy bonds, which are zero to low interest bonds for the funding renewable energy projects. We are in the process, so we've received good news, and we are also working with the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Rural Utility Service, better known as RUS, for financing these projects. We are pursuing both CREBS and RUS financing right now, because one is a 15-year note, the other is a 20-year note, and we're pursuing both of them we'll make a decision as to which is in our best interest. So financing, we're pursuing our applications for financing. We're in the process of getting ready to issue an RFQ for our engineering services, and then from there, we'll do an EPC contract. An EPC is an engineer, procurement, and construction. Okay. So you'll put out to bid in 2010 a turnkey project for these four wind turbine projects, two in Harwich and two in Brewster.
Who backs these bonds?
Clean renewable energy bonds are backed by the federal government. As opposed to, and Falmouth is a good project to compare, Falmouth years ago made a decision that they were going to issue general obligation bonds, say that's the other option. If you have the debt capacity and you're interested in pledging the full faith and credit of the taxpayers, a town now, as approved by the Green Communities Act, can issue its own debt. And again, remember, when we started and formed the cooperative, the Green Communities Act was not a law, so we didn't have an option of doing this that way. So we pursued doing it regionally, and towns have opted to continue to do it on a regional basis because they see the value of working together to develop renewable energy projects as opposed to pursuing them on their own.
And what are the benefits to the towns as opposed to going out on their own and doing it on their own? Why should they join the co-op?
That's first as a policy choice. Mm-hmm. The benefits are, as I just talked about, one, some of the towns are reaching their debt capacity. So issuing a geo bond for two turbines at $10 million is a significant undertaking. They have other projects, capital projects in the pipeline, so you're competing with other interests. So the ability to have the project financed and built without impacting your ability, your debt capacity is a great benefit and asset for many of the towns. Also, some of our smaller communities, they are not interested or have the technical capabilities on staff to administer and run these projects. They want the benefit. They were very willing to hand over all of the technical aspects of issuing the RFP, managing the project, and the funding to get it to the point where it's producing revenue to another entity.
And somebody has to run these things once they're up and running too.
Yes, and John, you hit on an excellent point. Again, a decision was made that we either are or are not going to hire additional staff and take on the responsibility for administering these projects locally. And Harwich and Brewster have decided that it was in their best interest to do it regionally.
Okay, well, Maggie, we were talking a lot about, liability to the towns. I want you to explain a little bit about the liability that the cooperative takes on that the towns don't have to worry about.
On the ride up to the studio, we were talking about some of going back to the benefits of the cooperative, and we've touched on two of them. One is a cooperative unlike town financing and the liability, the financial, and we're talking financial liability, we are a rural electric cooperative, which is a designation that we obtained through the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Being a rural electric cooperative opens financing doors that towns are not, and access the ability to access capital that towns and counties on their own can't access. And I specifically mentioned the Rural Utility Service. That is an organization whose main purpose is to finance electric generation for rural electric cooperatives. And we are now, their mission priority has now become financing renewable energy projects of cooperatives. So we are in an excellent position to obtain federal financing and long-term debt, again, backed, as we talked about earlier, John, by the federal government for these projects. So what that does is it limits the liability of a town and insulates them from any financial exposure. If a town were to pursue a large-scale, you know, a $5 million or $10 million wind turbine project, and something happens to that project, which is not likely, but if it did.
Or if a huge hurricane came and knocked the whole wind turbine down.
Again, not likely, but the full faith and credit of the town or the taxpayers are behind that. So bond council, if something happened to the project, you'd have to raise taxes to pay meet your obligations. The cooperative law insulates its members from its initial capitalization or pledge, which is a $25 membership fee. So another reason, again, going back to the study as to why we formed a cooperative, is it the towns are risk averse, and rightfully so. So they were looking for a way to insulate and minimize any financial exposure they would have from pursuing electric generation projects, because this is not our standard service. We do police, fire, and schools, not get into electric generation projects. So this affords a member a way to minimize financial exposure and risk.
It almost eliminates it.
Yes. Yeah. So. Well, it minimizes it to your $25 capitalization right. pledge. So the co-op cannot come back knocking on right. Provincetown or Bourne's door right. and saying, oh, you have to, by the way, you have to raise taxes to meet this.
So you're in obligation. You're in the cooperative for $25, and that's basically.
The towns and counties yeah. are, yes. Yeah. They have a membership fee.
Okay.
We're going to take a little break here and just let you know that we're listening to Cape Lake Compact's Focus on Energy. Our guest today is Maggie Downey, who is here to speak with us about renewable energy projects underway through the Cape and Vineyard Electric Cooperative. Maggie, I know there are some other groups who are currently in the process of forming their own cooperatives, most notably out on Martha's Vineyard. Can you tell us, I mean, I know you've explained quite eloquently the benefits to the towns, but what's the difference between anything that these other groups can offer through their cooperatives as opposed to what they're going to get through the Cape and Vineyard Electric Cooperative?
The primary difference, as I talked about, is their co-ops are one member, one vote. Our membership, in order to maintain our tax-exempt status, is limited to Section 115 entities, which are towns and cities and counties in Massachusetts. The Vineyard has decided to pursue a group, and it isn't the whole Vineyard, because we do have members of the mm-hmm. Vineyard who are members of the Cape and Vineyard Cooperative. But there is a group that is pursuing forming a cooperative that will be made up of private taxpaying citizens and businesses, and they are banding together to try and pursue the development of renewable energy projects. And the primary difference, as I said, will be that entity will have to have a couple more steps. They will have to pay taxes on their transactions, which will change the economics. And having not looked at them, I can't say, but mm-hmm. I know that when we looked at it, they made the projects not economically viable. And they will also have to take an additional step in order to get the benefits. They will not be net metering, so they'll have to become a licensed competitive supplier, and then people will have to join and sign up for that supplier in order to participate and get the benefits in their projects. It's a much more complicated and a little bit a more costly endeavor than what the towns on the Cape mm-hmm. and Vineyard have chosen. And again, the projects that we're looking at, and I can't speak to anything on, mm-hmm. on the Vineyard, the projects that we are looking at are small-scale land-based wind. These are 1 and 2 turbine projects. And they are not economically viable without the benefits of net metering.
I want you to explain. I know we had talked a little bit earlier in the program about net metering, and you were going to come back to it. I think this is the perfect time to now describe what is net metering in layman's terms so everybody can understand.
Net metering deserves its own radio show, but I'll give it a try. The Green Communities Act was signed into law on July 2nd, 2008 by Governor Patrick. And the Green Communities Act does several things, but focusing on net metering is it establishes a retail value for the surplus energy that these projects produce. And I'll talk mainly about large-scale 1.5 or 600 kW wind turbines or a megawatt of PV. Mm-hmm. Prior to the passage of the Green Communities Act, in order to use the renewable energy projects, renewable energy electricity from a large-scale wind turbine, it had to be located behind the meter, meaning you would have a wastewater treatment plant that uses lots of electricity, and then you would put in a wind turbine that's producing lots of electricity. Mm-hmm. And you would be offsetting, because when the wind is blowing and you're producing electricity, whether it's wind or sun, pick your technology, you're not purchasing electricity from the grid. You're producing your own. You're getting the benefits directly. When you don't need electricity at that plant, you would be selling it at a wholesale level into the market. And the wholesale market price were very low, and it made you weren't getting a retail price for it. So what the net metering law created is gives somebody who owns, does two things. One, it's a virtual net metering, so you no longer have to be behind the meter. I can now put my wind turbine where the wind is located, maybe on a ridge or on a, you know, on a bluff, or I can put my PV in a farm piece of plot that I have still open space, and you can allocate credits. And what has happened, and there's two things that you need to preface this, is they've established the retail rate by giving you a net metering credit. So what they do is if you produce 10 kilowatt hours of electricity, you are given, for public entities, which we are, mm-hmm. we are given the transmission, the transition, and the distribution charges on your regulated bill, plus the NSTAR basic service rate, and that's totaled together. So instead of getting that just the wholesale rate of 5 cents, I now might be getting, I'll use an example of 9.5 cents. So the output from these projects are now more valuable because the law established a calculation for determining the value of the energy produced by these renewable energy facilities. I think it's important to note that the value is then socialized back to other customers. There's a cap on net metering of 1% of the NSTAR SEMA territory, which is about 50 megawatts.
What's SEMA?
No, it's SEMA. I was just going to say that.
SEMA is Southeastern Massachusetts. So in the law, they cap net metering at 1% of the distribution company's peak load for this zone.
It's for Southeastern Massachusetts.
Southeastern Mass, which is 50 megawatts. Okay. So it's not just the Cape and Vineyard. It's a pretty big area, and mm-hmm. there are lots of generation going in to take advantage of this. You know, again, they're trying to, the law is an attempt to stimulate the development and the pursuit of renewable energy projects by making them more economically viable. Because right now, today, the fuel at a wholesale level cannot compete with the fossil fuel market. So just like fossil fuels get lots of credits, and we now have something in Massachusetts to stimulate and enhance the value of our renewable energy projects. And it's a credit. It's a net metering credit. The law spells out how it's calculated and determined. So going back to the original question, without the net metering credit, the cost of energy from these projects, these two wind turbines in Harwich and Brewster, which are not behind the meter, so they're not offsetting any load, they would run in the red. They would not pay for themselves. The net metering credit turns these because it gives you the extra revenue, turns these projects from a negative venture into a positive.
Well, I think that's been one of the misconceptions about renewable energy, that people think that since the fuel was free, then why wouldn't it be much cheaper to generate from renewable sources? And up until now, until this mechanism has been put in place, it has been more expensive, and renewable energy was quite a bit more expensive than the conventional means. And this kind of levels the playing field a little bit, and it's quite actually quite exciting.
Yes, it levels the playing field significantly, and it positions the co-op and our municipal members to take advantage of that and to bring those benefits back to their taxpayers.
And, well, the nice part is not only will they be offsetting their municipal load and putting savings to their taxpayers, you said 10% of that goes back to the compact, which is spread out over all of the customers that are taking advantage of the electricity rates. Now, obviously, this is going to make the electricity sold by Cape Light Compact or distributed greener, I would say, than most of the other, if this all works right.
Remember, four turbines, we're talking 10 million kilowatt hours, and we're a billion kilowatt hour load. So it's a very, I don't want to oversell it. This is the first step. It is the first of a long journey that it will take to bring the benefits from a renewable energy project into your electric bill, because the Cape Light Compact is the provider for the majority of the customers. And, you know, in order to get, there's always the physical path of the electrons and the contractual path, and we're trying to bring those benefits both in the contractual way and as well as the physical way.
Besides the wind projects, do you have any other projects on the horizon that you can tell us about?
Yes, actually, we're beginning later this week. We will begin the first of 8 installations of approximately a little over 900 kW of PV, photovoltaic, which is solar installations, on 8 public buildings on the Cape. And there are 2 in East Ham Elementary, East Ham DPW, as well as Barnstable High, Stony Brook in Brewster, the Eddy School in Brewster, the Bourne Middle School, and Harwich Elementary. So they will all, and Dennis DPW as well. So they'll be receiving very large, anywhere from 100 to 163 kW PV installations, and they will realize immediate savings as soon as those are installed. So it isn't, the co-op isn't just focusing on one technology. Mm-hmm. We are looking at all available technologies to bring savings to our members.
That's great. Well, with that, Maggie, we're going to have you back to talk more about a lot of these projects that are going on, because we have come to the end of our program. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
For joining us. You've been listening to Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy, timely topics on energy matters of interest to the Cape Cod community. If you have questions or topics you'd like us to address in future programs, you can email us at focus@capelightcompact.org or call us at 1-800-797-6699 and sign up for an energy audit while you're at it. And you can also visit our website at www.capelightcompact.org. I'd like to thank our guest, Maggie Downey, and John Burns, who is my esteemed colleague who's with me every step of the way. And also, I'd like to thank our engineer, John Braden, for all he's done for us today. Thank you very much, John. Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy is broadcast from the historic schoolhouse in Provincetown, 92.1 on your FM dial, and streamed on the World Wide Web at www.womr.org. I'm your host, Amy Vohl, and I want to thank you very much for listening, and as always, wish you a wonderful, energy-efficient afternoon.